welcome back to another MCU for Dummies. I am dummy number one, Ken. That is dummy number two, Lou, and we are burdened. Oh, well, Lou has a... Lou, did you point at me there?
I was just pointing up.
Like, you son of a bitch. Like, let's go. Son of a bitch.
Keep going. Keep going. Restart. You know, you're burdened with glorious purpose.
God damn
Ken,
it.
We have a guest on today. We can't...
Son of a bitch. I am burdened with glorious purpose to introduce our friend, Leo Riedel, at Leo Riedel on Twitter, a content creator, critic, and geek who loves to talk all things Marvel movies, anime, and TV. He is at Geekly Gods on YouTube. Leo, wow. What a, first off, what an incredible setup, what an incredible shirt, and what an incredible guest. Thanks so much for popping on.
Hey, guys. Thank you so much for having me. Yeah, you guys can find me at Geekly Goods on YouTube. I'm so excited to talk some MCU tonight with you guys. I mean, seriously, it just seems like something new with the MCU is coming out almost every hour. I mean, it's just an update of a No Way Home rumor.
Yeah,
we're about knee deep in those already. But
can I ask what you're hearing, man? Because the last thing I saw on Twitter, which I don't even want to repeat out loud because it made me super nervous and a little sweaty, is that we're looking at a postponement again.
Potentially, with Venom not having a release date at the end of the trailer, that's pretty concerning.
I do not like it.
Next, right before, it's supposed to come out September 24th, I want to say, and I don't know, man. It's gonna happen.
Do you think Kevin Feige would even let that happen?
I mean, yeah. He's like, the Sony Marvel stuff, you guys do your thing.
Yeah.
I'll be over at Disney with the shows. But, I'm wondering if it could happen because I've seen a post floating around that Sony was, like, telling its employees to, like, kind of gently come back into work. They can still work from home and stuff. So, might be looking at potential backups here.
Maybe I don't like it, Leo. I got to be honest with you. I hate it. I'd rather die than have to. I mean, we've done this all in the back. As Lou knows, I've used this analogy 400 times. And if you are the person who has listened to all the MCU for Dummies episodes, you will hear me again say, I'm going to peel the curtain back like the Wizard of Oz. You can take a peek behind the curtains. But like Leo, Lou, and I were just talking right before the show about how we've just gotten into Marvel, really, really started, like really picking it up. Leo's talking about a new rumor every other 15 seconds coming out of the universe. And now we're talking about delaying the whole damn thing again.
Yeah.
I don't know. Well,
not any like other movie. I don't know, man. It's like if we lay back Far From Home, or I'm sorry, No Way Home. See, these damn homecoming.
I don't like it.
But No Way Home, you delay that, then.
Then you've got to push back Strange, right?
Yeah.
Because you're talking, and we talked about with our last guest. Look, Lou, look at me. I'm doing really good stuff here. I'm plugging our last episode. We had a conversation with Dave Johnston at Inverse.com last week, and we talked about the three big plots, Leo, that are going on right now. You have the Earthly story with, like, the Secret Invasion / Young Avengers / Thunderbolts, whatever you want to call it, right? Like, all of that stuff. And then you have like this otherworldly multiverse crap going on at the same time. Do you think they could move forward maybe with like Young Avengers / Thunderbolts / Dark Avengers without pushing forward the multiverse? Or do you think they need that to happen congruently here?
I kind of think it seems like a congruent thing, like they're leading up to Secret Wars. So it seems like these things need to be happening at the same time in order for them to collide eventually. I'm wondering, though, if you delay one just a little bit, it may not affect the Young Avengers stuff because they could still have that come out on Disney Plus. Hawkeye can still roll out for all we know in terms of the order. It may not be so bad if we're waiting like a month.
Nobody's going to be that upset having to wait an extra month for Hawkeye. I got to be totally honest with you.
well, I'm talking Spider-Man. God forbid that doesn't get delayed.
But. Yeah, no. Well, we can see it in your setup there. Are you a bit? If you had to pick, now we're going off the rails. If you had to pick a favorite, you know, Marvel superhero, is it the Hulk or is it Spider-Man or the X-Men? I mean, they're up on your wall right behind you.
Oh, man, it's always Spider-Man.
Yeah?
Always Spider-Man. Like, I've read all 700 issues of the original Amazing Run, and I just love Spider-Man. Read the Spider-Verse stuff, like, anything really cool. Spidey, I'm there.
Really cool. So take me through, and we're going to get into some of your hottest takes. I know you've got one already that you said before the show started, and it's still percolating in the back of my head there. But take me through how this all started for you, Leo. How did you become a Marvel critic? How did you get into TV and movies and, you know, start to get invited to pre-screenings and things like that? Like, give us your abridged life story.
So essentially, I started out watching movies when I was like really young. 6 or 7 was when I started sneaking into my parents' collection, and like when they're asleep at night, I would play a DVD.
Listen, me too, but that's what got me in trouble back in the day.
What's that?
I said me too, but that's what got the computer virus early in the days.
Yep. It would usually be something rated R, like Blade or Matrix or something super cool that my parents were like, yeah, no, you're not watching that.
Yeah,
I would sneak that out of the basement, man. It was such a good time. And then once I got to school, right after I graduated, I just started like writing about movies, because I had always been a guy who loved the movies, was always there on the weekend, always seeing the newest stuff. So I figured might as well just write about them, and writing transitioned into doing it on camera. And now I've just been YouTubing about it ever since. And I appear on a couple of other different outlets. Anime News Network is one I make a little bit of content for. I make a video every other month for them. And then also I'm going to start on this company called Geek, who will be doing
really cool
news updates on this stuff. So I'll be working on there as well. And yeah, I mean, when the MCU first started, we're talking Iron Man 1.
Yeah,
I was there. Seated in place, guys, because my first Marvel movie in theaters was actually Spider-Man 2. Or I'm sorry, Spider-Man.
Right, the OG Tobey Mac.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. That Tobey Maguire magic.
That brings you back, doesn't it?
Yeah. Ooh, what a rewind, right?
Goodness me. Yeah. I mean, tell me a little bit about what you've enjoyed during your journey as kind of a content creator. Did you always do writing, or did writing come naturally to you, or was it one of those things where it was like, this is the only way I can build myself a platform, so I'm gonna have to learn how to fucking write here, which sucks.
Yeah, it kind of was like, I loved English classes and I like to write anyway, so I figured this would be the avenue for me. But when it came to like writing reviews, I just didn't feel like it was enough expression. So I ended up doing them on camera, and I worked at a TV show for a little while, and I learned editing skills and graphic skills from there. And then I just splashed that really all into cool. like making YouTube videos instead, because it just felt a little more natural and it felt a little like I was more in my element. Writing is nice, but it just can feel a little tedious at times.
And what would you say to folks who maybe want to get started, right? Who want to maybe start their own thing, or you know, have something to say and want to say it out loud and try and build their own audience? What would you say to somebody who like maybe just doesn't feel comfortable as an authority on their own opinion, right? Like, cause that's a learned skill also, to be comfortable saying what you think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I mean, it can take a lot. I would just say, if you're thinking about it, definitely just start. That's the first place, because you just never know. Guys, when I was first on camera, let me tell you, I seen it probably 3 months ago. My very first video review, it was absolutely terrible. Just
I
go
don't
for it.
You, Leo.
Hit record. No, it was it was nothing like this. Let me tell you, it was definitely like, hi, I'm here to review. Like, I no idea what I was doing, but just hit record. Just start talking. You'll get more comfortable the more you do it. Don't worry about, oh, there being so many people. Kind of look at it as a Thanksgiving table. Like, we're all bringing a side to the table together. We're not here to beat up on each other, guys. We're here to collaborate. We're here to grow in this community together.
I'm happy to hear you say that, because we feel the same way. And obviously we're a small channel where, you know, we're doing a passion project here. And then you think of the guys over at like New Rock Stars, right? And like, what they do. And it's just like, you know what? That is the turkey on the table. I'm very happy for you to do the turkey. I am more than happy being like the bread, you know, like, because you still need
it.
Bread. You still need it. Leo, really quick. We're sitting here late 2020, well, mid 2020. Who the fuck knows when it is anymore? It's August of 2021 during this recording. What excited you most about the early slate of Marvel Phase 4? And what has hit that mark for you so perfectly so far?
Oh, man. So just shows, movies, well, we've
anything. What have you seen?
Oh, my goodness, guys. Both, this is an answer for both questions.
Okay.
WandaVision.
Yeah.
That was an absolute wonder for me. Like, yeah. I just thought the many different spoofs off of other TV shows was a great way to start things out and kind of get this mystery boiling behind what was going on in the actual world. I really, really enjoyed the theory talk we got to come together to enjoy every single week. It seemed like it was, clearly way more than Falcon and Winter Soldier, more than Loki, even though there's still speculation with Loki. WandaVision was what just really had those theories cooking up.
Yeah.
And I think it was just coming back to the MCU after a year and a half-ish. I mean, the last time we had seen a movie or show was Spider-Man Far From Home,
insane,
2019. So that was the first hit of the MCU for us in a year and a half. And I think it just hit at the perfect time. It was beautifully performed all throughout. I mean, seriously, the cast list is absolutely banging, so much so that Elizabeth Olsen, Paul Bettany, Catherine Hahn have all been nominated for.
And don't forget Emmys. Paul Bettany's favorite actor, Paul Bettany.
Yep. The one he was looking forward to being on camera with himself.
Yes. Classic, though. You know what? Good for him. That's a real level of confidence that I wish I had, you know?
I'm like, oh, man, I got the evil eyes on you, man.
Yeah, you can never trust another thing he said. I will never watch the movie Wimbledon with sincere eyes ever again, Paul. You really ruined it. I need to know, man, how to ask to elicit my favorite response, because... because there's a right answer here, Leo. I want to be honest with you.
Uh-oh.
Because we've seen now three. Yes. We've seen Black Widow, right? Which follows really the MCU formula. And there's nothing wrong with formulas. As our friend Daze Johnston said last week, formulas always give you the right answer, right? They are tried and true. Mm-hmm. Black Widow gave you the MCU formula. Falcon Winter Soldier really kind of gave you the MCU formula, just split up into six episodes, right? Mm-hmm. Loki kind of hit the MCU formula if you watch it straight through. Week by week, it maybe felt a little episodic, right?
But all together,
altogether it hits the MCU formula. But WandaVision, man, I mean, the finale maybe hits the MCU formula, but it just felt to me, and I'm interested to hear your thoughts, it was just on another level. It, like, if you picked it out of the MCU and placed it on CBS for a miniseries run, you would never know.
Yeah. It felt so different because the tone was just constantly shifting episode to episode. You had these different intros every episode that were just gloriously performed. And even Kevin Feige himself was like a huge nerd about WandaVision. Like, he would be on set all the time. And if you watch the behind the scenes special that came after WandaVision, he's like always there. And they had a live studio audience. They really gave you a different feeling.
It was
of
cool.
The MCU, but still keeping those elements in it, but giving you different sitcom vibes and different types of shows, and also exploring an MCU storyline behind the scenes too. They still have that going, but they have these different vibes every single episode. It was just incredible.
I'm about to change tracks on you real quick.
Let's do it.
So keep up. Black Widow, where does it rank for you in MCU solo films? Let's keep the team ups to the side, right? They're really cool. They're cool. The team ups are cool. It's hard to beat the team ups, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
they're too much fun.
So are we including Civil War in team ups?
I guess you can't, right? Because it is a Captain America movie, even though So I mean, I'll leave that one up to you. But if you compare it to Iron Man, if you compare it to, you know, maybe let's just say the OGs, right? Let's just call them the OGs. Call it Homecoming, Iron Man, First Avenger, Thor, etc. Where does Black Widow fall for you?
Are we just talking like Avengers only? Are we talking like Ant-Man and every character's first movie?
Yep, every character's first.
Probably about middle of the road.
Yeah.
It kind of, like you were saying, it's formulaic. And I think that it's weird to say this, but Scarlett Johansson just didn't get, in my opinion, the screen energy that she deserved, which is weird to say, but it was like Florence Pugh and David Harbour has so much charm in this movie that it really took away from Scarlett in some opportunities. So while I did really enjoy it, it takes away from the main character, the main actress who's supposed to be the star, kind of took some moments away from her a little bit. And I thought this is her last movie. She should really be front and center. And yeah. I get that they want to pass the baton, but she's kind of getting a little out-acted here.
Well, maybe she was, you know, writing up the lawsuit in the middle of
the middle of the reshoots. She was just on the sideline taking notes for that. For her trial.
And good for her, man. I honestly think we all, I don't want to speak for everybody here, but I'm a Feige stan. I know that about myself. And I, you know, and he stands with ScarJo at, you know, with on this, you know, issue. And so do I, honestly. I think it's a really good stand for her and Emily Blunt. Unfortunately, The Rock doesn't need to do it because he probably got paid through the nose. I wonder if it has anything to do with the fact that he's got a penis. I don't know. Who could tell? Not me. But, you know, reeling myself back in here a little bit. I really enjoyed Black Widow through the lens of like some of the storytelling. I thought it had like some of the best hand-to-hand combat we've seen in a long time. Which, and like the comedy was really good.
Oddly enough, it had a lot of really good hand-to-hand in the beginning, and then it kind of slowly declined throughout the movie.
Yes.
Like it was like that Taskmaster. The first encounter with Taskmaster was absolutely amazing.
It was awesome. Like,
Might be top 15 MCU battles, period. And then you had that Yelena versus Natasha. That was absolutely excellent.
Gorgeous.
Kind of just sails downhill after that. I mean, they run into one of the other widows. That was a good one. And then we get a little mixed up after that.
Yeah. I mean, the movie itself, I mean, you talk about like a formula, right? Like it tries to follow the formula, but I think they got too tied into passing the baton than telling the story of Natasha Romanoff, which may have been the holdup in the fun towards the end of the movie.
Yeah. I mean, it's a good point. It's when you have this last hurrah, you want it to really feel like it's that character's biggest moment, and it just didn't feel that way. And it might have, let's be real, it would have felt a lot better had it just come right after Civil War.
Yeah.
You just have this.
I mean, or if they just showed us what the fuck happened in Budapest, right? So like we could all just like move on with our lives instead of like pretending that Scarlett Johansson and Jeremy Renner like hung out in a air vent for
like show
weeks.
Us what happened. Tic-tac-toe. Come on, that's not enough.
That's not enough. Not even close. It might seem like I'm booking my way through the MCU, but I know how much other stuff you work on, and I want to get to that also, Leo, and I don't want to keep you until midnight, which is something I could definitely do, so I'm not going to do that, I promise.
Hey, let's chat it up, man. I'm ready.
So I want to know now, we've done what came out early 2021. Let's do what's coming next. Shang-Chi looks like it's going to be phenomenal. The Eternals still baffles my brain. I have no idea what to expect, even a little bit. As somebody who doesn't know a lot of Marvel lore either, like, I'm relying on everybody to tell me what to expect. And then it's one of those movies you're just going to enjoy because you have no idea what the fuck is going to happen. So those two things are...
sleeper.
Yeah, well, yeah, I would think so too, man. I would think so too, especially with Kit Harington. You never know what he's going to pull out of and Angelina Jolie, I think, is in it, right? Am I making that up?
Yeah, man, Richard Madden's in it.
Yeah, it's like, it's cool. It seems cool.
Emma Chan.
Yeah, I'm excited. It's going to be fun. So those are things that we know are on the forefront of coming next. What If is next week, I believe. We're 7 days out from What If at the moment. What are you most looking forward to? And instead of what do you think is going to hit the mark, what do you think might put you off a little bit? What do you think might be a little bit of a miss?
Well, I definitely...
You cannot count Hawkeye. Hawkeye does not count.
Oh, no! Well, I'm definitely most excited for Spider-Man. I mean, with all these rumors going
everybody
around,
is,
speculation,
man.
How deeply secretive they're being about the trailer.
Oh, yeah.
It just makes me want it, like, right now. And yes. I know they're going to hold it for as long as they can. They may not even release a trailer. Like,
I honestly, I wouldn't.
No trailer, I would love it.
You got to think for some of these properties, man, you don't even need to put out a trailer. Like, who are you marketing to?
Endgame? We don't even need a trailer. Let's be real.
Yeah, exactly. Like, who are you marketing to?
Mjolnir, that was enough for me to say, wow, the trailers did not show me that.
I still see those videos pop up on my TikTok with the audience. Yes, I'm a grown man with TikTok. It's fine. I don't have an account. I just scroll, okay? And sometimes Gordon Ramsay rates food, and I think it's funny. But I still see the audience reactions of Cap grabbing Mjolnir, and I still get goosebumps just sitting at home rewatching somebody's, you know, third-party video on TikTok. I still lose my mind. It's still chilling nuts.
Because it was just this moment that we built up to for so long. You get that one little reference, him just kind of slightly moving it in Age of Ultron led up to that, to him actually being worthy of it. It wasn't just planted just for the sake of making Captain America look like a righteous character. Like, no, he actually was fit for Mjolnir. And what a beautiful payoff that turned out to be.
Man, we got to get to Cap. We got to get to Cap too. But before we do that, I need to know, what are you most looking forward to rest of 2021 other than, well, no, you said Spider-Man.
Okay,
so, I'll give you that.
I want to do other than Spider-Man. I can do other than
Spider-Man. If you want, if you want. But I need, but I also am, I'm mostly interested, Leo, in what do you think might come up a touch short? Because there's a lot of promises right now, man. There's a lot of promises out there.
Oh, man. You know, I hate to say it. I hate to say it because this is one that probably is right up underneath Spider-Man for me, but I'm chronically nervous. And that's Shang-Chi, because it looks absolutely gorgeous. It looks awesome. The action and dynamic looks great. I mean, the hand-to-hand, even that robust sequence alone looks absolutely glorious. It looks like Kung Fu martial arts movie style editing too, where they're going to do long takes, wraparounds, not as many cuts. So I'm super excited for that. I hope they don't pull an Iron Fist, because we know what happened with Iron Fist. And at least season one, I haven't finished season two. I really have no desire. But season one, at least, just missed the mark completely with the martial arts and with...
It's such an interesting thing to have to do, isn't it? I mean, and I sit here as a straight white guy with my straight white guy co-host. And we talk about these things so many times where it just feels like a reach. And it feels cringy, right, when you see some of those things, right? And I think a lot of people maybe felt that way leading into Black Panther, like, okay, this could be bad, right? But they did a good job. Mm-hmm. And you're kind of like, I think it's fair to be, and it's the same thing with Captain Marvel. You're going, okay, this is a woman-led story. How are we going to do the woman-led story? Same thing with Black Widow, right? And now it's Shang-Chi. Like, so I feel it. Also, I'm kind of with you, but I also have no idea what would be a good outcome, to be totally honest with you.
Yeah, it's just, honestly, I think a great outcome for Shang-Chi would just be a movie that's filled with great martial arts flair. I mean, seriously, you promise us the best fighter, the best martial artist of the MCU. Give it to us. Don't give us what you gave Iron Fist. That was not working. Luke Cage season two was not working. Part of season one was pretty great because of Mahershala Ali, but the rest of season one was a mess.
Yeah.
Look, if they just really just do well with the cultural aspect of it all, and they also go really heavy in on the martial arts and, you know, still blending the Marvel in a little bit, but kind of focusing a lot on character story for this, build Shang-Chi up, give him purpose like you did Cap, like you did Iron Man, like you did everybody else. Do that for Shang-Chi here. Captain America, the First Avenger, was not an Avengers movie. Like, let's get back to the point where these are just individual stories. And I think it sucks because I think Captain Marvel does do that. It just does it poorly, unfortunately, especially with the second act where they're mostly in the cabin.
Yeah. And it was almost unfair to her initial story to have it in between Infinity War and Endgame and say,
put Black Widow there. Black Widow there, right before Endgame, last hurrah, Natasha. Yep,
exactly. Awesome. Exactly. It was almost unfair because it's a perfectly fine story, and it would have been a perfectly fine solo film, but it was carrying this weight of intense social, dilemma, right, on top of the pop cultural aspect of it being the lead in or like the first movie after Infinity War, where half of everybody we know has turned into dust. So it's like a really unfair position to put like that kind of movie in. So I totally feel you on that. I'm interested to hear actually now that I want to talk about Cap a little bit and like some of these solo movies, because you're right. I think the real like heart of the MCU comes from you care about these characters individually, which helps you care about the characters as a whole.
Yeah.
And I think you make a good point where they need to get back to that, because I think a lot of that is going to potentially be missing from this Secret Wars type thing, because everybody we're meeting is coming in a big group output right now.
Yeah, and so that's why I like this split that they're creating between the movies and the shows. It seems to me like you get an equal sprinkle of both of those things, because we're getting Moon Knight and She-Hulk. Those will be new characters. We're getting Shang-Chi. We're getting the Eternals group. Those will be opportunities to really steer the ship backwards and actually go back to the storytelling of individual characters, getting us to grow with and love these characters. So then when we do a group up,
right,
it's executed perfectly, and you don't have to spend a lot of time on exposition explaining characters. You can just dive right into it. So I think if they Shang-Chi, Eternals, She-Hulk, Moon Knight, projects like that need to be pretty self-contained, and hopefully they can just build up and, you know, cameos here and there, that's fine, but
yeah.
It needs to be mostly about those characters. And when you got Wong and Abomination and Shang-Chi, yeah, and it's like, yeah, okay, that's awesome, but is it going to take away from, right, Shang-Chi?
Yeah, it's and Lou asks this question a lot, and we talk about we're currently, when we don't have a guest on and when there's not a new Marvel property to talk about, which at this point seems like it'll never happen again, we are sitting through a chronological rewatch of the MCU. We're currently right after Avengers 2012, so we're only, what is that, 6 movies in, I think, and every other week there's a new story to talk about. So but what you notice through that, for when you're doing the rewatch of those films, which are all individual films, including some sequels in there, with Iron Man 2, I think, like, it's, you don't know what's coming, right? Like, you don't know that you're going to get Avengers 2012, right? Like, everybody knew that was coming, and that was going to be really awesome. And that was the height of what you expected. Now the expectations are astronomical. And you expect every story to tie into every other story that exists seamlessly, with no exposition or retconning or anything else, right? You just expect it to flow. Do you think they can hit that? Or do you think it's too much right now? Do you think they need to tear it? Not even just in phase 4. I mean, in phase 4, 5, and 6. Do you think they need to kind of tear this back down to its roots to build it back up? Or do you think they're just playing the name of the game right now?
So I kind of like that there are a few different stories going on, like you referenced earlier. There's the multiverse, there's new stories, and then there's also the new Avengers forming and things like that. So I think having several different stories going concurrently with a nice coherent way to explain it all, with the multiverse and things like that, really makes it convincing and believable that it's going to get stronger and stronger, because you still have fresh projects, you still get that MCU buzz that you loved before, because we're building new Avengers, we're getting more characters involved, we're evolving characters. I mean, Scarlet Witch, Captain America, we're getting these new versions of characters that we know and love. So I think you just get a mixed bag of everything, and that's going to please everybody. It's going to please the MCU diehards, going to please the people who are getting into it newly and want something cool and new to be a part of. It's going to please the people who might have just kind of been watching movies here and there and can still participate and enjoy the bigger movies like Avengers. It's going to please everybody. So I think they're doing it very coherently. And I hate to bring it up, but DC needs to take a little bit of note here and kind of just do the same thing.
Yeah, so Lou got us in trouble on DC Twitter not too long ago. Lou, do you want to give Leo some backstory here?
If you're listening, we had an awkward pause in the conversation. So watch us. Watch us Dennis Rodman here and try to rebound the game. But no, it was a harmless tweet. It was just like, what if? Loki was like very important for our Twitter page to grow from 8 followers to 30. It was very easy to be in the conversation. And that's another topic that I would love to get into, just when Marvel's cooking, there's so much entry to get into the conversations.
Oh,
let's put that off on the side of our Thanksgiving table that we're building here. The tweet was basically like, what is your best what if? And I said, what if DCEU movies were good? I'm not trying to be a hater, okay? I just know that that is part of the shtick here.
And Leo, I think, I don't know if his verbiage will make it into the cut, because, you know, magic of editing. But like, he said, like, is there a hot take on the DCEU?
Well, let me frame the question.
I don't think that's a very hot take.
Let me frame the question. Leo is somebody that is clearly very well versed in movies. Even looking at his YouTube channel, there are movies from all across the spectrum.
And that's
so I feel,
Geekly Goods on YouTube, folks. Geekly Goods on
YouTube. I feel confident in asking him the question of, what is the DCEU missing? Are they really that bad? And just lay all the cards out on the table.
Okay.
What is the piece here? And
Leo, please be careful, because we cannot defend you from
from
the Snyderverse Twitter.
What
that
are people
is going
missing?
To be very angry.
Are they missing something? Like, what's the stick here? And can James Gunn really just save every movie?
Yeah. Can James Gunn just direct everything? Is that the idea?
Oh, if James Gunn came in and directed everything, they'd have a perfect universe. Guys.
They would. Yeah.
Suicide Squad was amazing, but here's what I'm going to say about DC. They've got so many strengths, and they've got the most popular characters. Look,
absolutely.
Let's zoom back 20 years here. You say Iron Man in the conversation, people are like, who?
You put Captain the video America? Game Marvel versus DC on the, you know, in an arcade or in like a weird place that your parents take you and they got the stupid game in the lobby, right? Every time you pick the DC characters.
Heck yeah, you're picking every Batman, time. Superman, Wonder Woman, Green Lantern, like Flash. Everybody is more well-versed in DC characters. And DC, I would say, has slightly better comics as well. The writers are strong. The continuity is great. The new 52 is rough. But Rebirth, the new series, amazing. The problem is the execution in the live-action media is just not good at all. Like, honestly, they don't have a cohesive plan. And it seems like they're on track with the DCEU stuff. Now with the Suicide Squad, and you've got Aquaman 2 coming up, Flash, seems like they can kind of be on track, but first and foremost, let's not have Patty Jenkins do any more script writing. And then also...
And Joss Whedon can hop off into the hills together.
Yeah, and I'm sorry, let me correct myself. Story writing, she did the story for Wonder Woman 84, but...
There was a story in that movie?
Believe it or not, there was a story. But if they just had a cohesive plan, this would be solved. But see, they're just like Marvel. They have several different timelines going on, but it's being horridly executed because, okay, Zack Snyder's Justice League crept up on us. That happened, and that's Elseworlds. It's not even in the DCEU. Then you got the DCEU still going, which supposedly for now, the Justice Cut is still involved. So you still have that storyline going on. You have the Batman. Joker came out. You've got this HBO Max stuff going with Batgirl, Gotham City PD. There is just so much going on without a cohesive plan. It makes it hard to enjoy. And then you've got really great gems in DC, like the Harley Quinn show, the Suicide Squad. Doom Patrol is off the charts good. Yeah.
Peacemaker is going to be a TV show.
Birds of Prey. I quite enjoyed Birds of Prey.
I loved Birds of Prey, actually, a lot. Shazam, I enjoyed.
Shazam's like a sneakily very good movie.
Yeah,
like,
it's funny.
It's really fun. Leo, I have a question for you and a take, and I'd love to, as a movie reviewer and a critic, I'd like to hear your thoughts. I think DC a lot of times lives in the in-between world in superhero stories, where you have things like The Boys and Invincible, which are fucking brutal, right? And it is one way to look at superheroes. And there's a lot of blood, and it's nasty, and it's gross. And
they're also very highly rated shows.
Right,
too.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's one side of the spectrum, right? And then on the other side of the spectrum, and I think Marvel does this really well, it's very family friendly. And it's fun, and it's still a lot of beat 'em up bad guy, and it's still a lot of convoluted storylines. But if you don't want to understand it, you don't have to. You can watch all of those movies individually and not have to worry about anything else. And you'd still have fun watching Ant-Man and the Wasp, which I know you did.
yes, sir.
I think DC is living somewhere in the middle between those things. And especially when it was the Snyderverse, where they're like, this is very real and people die, but also Wonder Woman can make this plane invisible and don't worry about it. Like, it's very cool. You know, like, it's just like a very weird in-betweener attitude towards it. It's like, either go nasty with it and start like murdering people on the street and splattering their blood and rate your movies R, or do family-friendly Batman stuff. Like, you pick. But it can't be in the middle.
If the Batman is rated R like the Suicide Squad was, that's going to pay off. DC should just move into rated R content.
Why not?
They do the rated R stuff so well.
Yeah.
So well. I mean, it would just be awesome. I know that the worry is box office and yada yada.
Yeah, but was your box office killing it when you were putting out, like, you know, like,
Aquaman killed it. That's
Aquaman did kill it. But like, I mean, geez, if you went back out there though, and like, knowing what everybody knows now, if you did like Justice League 2, would that do well?
I don't really know with all this drama.
Right.
Like, I don't know, man. I mean, look. Justice League, Zack Snyder's Justice League stuff aside, they could have later on down the line a cohesively lined up DCEU. They really could.
Sure.
Like, all they really need to do is just from here on out, do these individual character movies a little bit more. You can do Suicide Squads and stuff like that, but do these individual movies really great, and then we can just move from there,
yeah,
go into another lead up. They could do something different. I totally forgot they also do Arrowverse as well. And
oh gosh,
three shows on Arrowverse, the rest of them are not that great.
Yeah, it seems to be a common thread that like some of it is very good and most of it sucks, and it's just like, why? Like, how? Like, well, you got Gal Gadot. You had, you know, whoever the heck, Ben Affleck. Like you have these A-listers, like these monster actors, Henry Cavill. Like, what are we doing
here? Let me try to rephrase this. Why has Marvel been so successful? What have they done so right? Because there was the pre-Disney acquisition, and now they come from a position of strength where there's TV shows, there's the one person at the helm in Kevin Feige. I don't know if we can say that the same with DCU.
If that man has like any sort of stroke, like, I don't know what tough. The hell we're gonna
but
do.
You know what, there's a great article in Variety about Michael Waldron from Loki. It just seems like Marvel is finding these writers and producers from all walks of life, bringing them in, nurturing them, and just setting them up for success. So what is the secret? Because all this is great, but like, you know, like a company's doing successful, it's, you know, you kind of take it for granted. But what happened to set this part up?
I think there's a mix of things. First and foremost, when they had that formula at its peak, that's when Kevin Feige came in, and there was somebody to just coordinate this great product and take it from good
right
to absolutely fantastic, because we got to that 2012 era Avengers. It was great, we were doing so much, but let's be real, we go back and watch Avengers 2012 and we're like, man, this could be a made for TV movie at this point.
Yeah, it's fine.
It's just he took it from good to absolutely bombastic, and that's a combination of a cohesive plan, bringing in talent that even though they're not recognized, they're still damn good at what they do, because the Russo brothers did Community. They did a couple other comedy movies, but I know Kevin Feige specifically recognized them for a certain episode of Community where they were doing like these paintball missions together. And he was like, these guys know how to coordinate characters. Like, they know how to create and expand and make good characters great. So let's bring them in and look at what it has done with Civil War, the Winter Soldier, the two Avengers movies that they did. I mean, seriously, they know talent. And I don't think that they look at anything like name and how long you've been doing it or whatnot. They know talent, and Kevin knows talent, and he just picks the talented people that are not well known and not so well known. And I like that Marvel gives chances to people. The girl's playing Miss Marvel. I don't think she has a single acting credit to her name, but watch her kill it. Watch her get up here and just probably do damn well, because Kevin knows talent. The people behind Marvel know talent. And I think DC, they know talent, they don't know execution.
What do you think it's like? Because, and I remember seeing an article a long time ago, I don't remember who it was from, or maybe it was a YouTube video, who knows, but it was kind of praising Marvel's use of individual directors for individual movies, because they put in so much of their own flair, and it's a different style, and the cinematography and this, that, and the other. Like, it's all important to have an individual person do it so they can own it, right? And having a sense of ownership. And I don't know if you're like, I don't know anybody listening, if you're like a corporate person, but they'll tell you that like the best way to get stuff out of your team at work is to give everybody on that group a sense of ownership over something, right? And you give Taika Waititi ownership over Thor and Ragnarok, right? Like, and he gets to do his thing, right?
And it is his product. Like, you watching that movie, you can tell it's a Taika Waititi movie. Like, you know his humor, you know his movies, you know, this is Taika Waititi's style. Same with James Gunn. Anybody they give their direct...
James Gunn's style is shoot a paintball gun at a blank wall until it looks like a movie. It's nuts. But so my thought is, Leo, I don't know if you've ever been in like a writer's room or like in a meeting with, you know, any of the, you know, anybody who's writing a movie or working on a movie, but it's like, what do you think Kevin Feige gets in the room and says to a Taika Waititi? Like, this is where your character starts and this is where he needs to end. I need this person to make a cameo. Fucking do it. You know, like, what do you think that's like?
I mean, yeah, I think it's a process of, you know, pitching and things like that. But I definitely think he pretty much lets that person execute their vision. And then I think Kevin comes in and is just kind of like, okay, final cuts at, or before the final cut gets out, I got to have a look over it and probably make some edits and changes, include some things. And like you were saying, I'm sure he does approach them with this has to happen. Because we're forming the universe, so these things need to happen. But here's all you need. Go for it. I'm gonna be here during that editing process.
Yeah, and I find it especially interesting. I find it especially interesting in reading some of the stuff post Loki, from Kate Herron and Michael Waldron, and just like they're picking some of the comics that they like most, right? Yeah. Like they're picking the stories that they enjoyed. And then making it work within this universe. And it's just such a different feeling than DC, which is just like Batman hangs out with the Joker all the time. And that's it. Like, that's what we got. You know? Oh, and it's like, man. Why? Why? Batman, where's the Penguin? Superman, somebody give me a Penguin.
Batman vs. Superman theater cut was pretty bad. Like, man, that was...
That's
so disappointing.
That's you being nice, Leo.
Yeah, and that's the thing is that you don't see those kinds of efforts around Batman versus Superman, the theatrical cut. I know Zach makes super long movies, and studios end up coming in and saying, look, man, this is 325. We're chopping it down to 2 hours. But it's like when they interfere so much, it takes away from it. Let the guy do a two-parter. If it's really that much, let's cut it up. Because it's just they're taking away from Zack's vision by cutting this all up.
Yeah,
and then the Justice League stuff and all that. It's a mess over there.
We don't have to rehash it. It happened.
It's a mess.
It happened. You know what else is a mess, Leo? Somebody assuming that Ant-Man and the Wasp is in the top 10 of the current 25 Marvel movies. Absolutely. I think that's a little high, my friend. Explain yourself.
All right, so Ant-Man and the Wasp just has this big air of fun to it where the entire movie is like an adventure. Seriously, they're barely stopping for dialogue. It's going on the whole time like a locomotive. And I love Evangeline Lilly and Paul Rudd. They're great together. Absolutely fantastic together. Ghost, a little rough. Like, I'll be real, rough villain, but still enjoy what I got.
And worse than Taskmaster?
Ooh.
Yeah, how about them apples, my friend?
Same level, I give you that. It's about the same-ish level now, and it's all in the execution. Because a cool costume, cool intro. You throw them in, and they throw the hero through a loop, and it's this really cool start to it. And then you get to the reveal, and you're just not as happy. You're kind of, oh well. I mean, Cap's grabbing Mjolnir in this movie, but this villain is like some weak sauce. Like, I thought maybe it was Lawrence Fishburne's daughter, but we just go kind of throw a curveball in.
I thought Lawrence Fishburne's total inclusion was a little odd to me. I just loved it.
The Giant Man reference. Oh, Lawrence
Fishburne always puts me off sometimes. Like, I don't know why. I think it's ever since I saw him in that Predators movie, and he's like hanging out in like his stupid spaceship on the planet, and he's like, he kind of like freaks me out now. Like, he was cool in The Matrix, and now he's just like, I need to get paid every now and
then. Like, he could be Neo, and that's it.
Yeah, that's pretty much where I'm at. I don't know what happened to him. Okay, I don't find it to be a bad movie. I think top 10 is, where would you put it in top 10? Like, are you talking top 10 as top 5? Or are you talking top 10 as like 8, 9, 10? Okay.
Yeah, I'm talking bottom 5.
Okay.
I think I have it at, I either have it at 10 or 9, and I know I have Ragnarok at the other one. So I think I have Ragnarok.
Wow, and I feel like that's low for Ragnarok. So that's fascinating.
Yeah, I got The letterbox is controversial, I've heard.
So so I need to know how to listen, man. This is a fascination for me because I just learned that letterbox exists. I had seen so many people on Twitter. They like put out their thing and they're like, here's a thing. And I'm like, well, how are you even doing that? So can I find you on Letterboxd? Yeah. Is that a thing that I can do?
At Leo Rydell. You can find me just search in the little search bar and then click users.
Oh, that's very exciting. I am, man. Well, I'm doing this.
Ken, how about you look that up? I got some questions.
I was just going to say, Lou, you should ask him a question while I get ready to grill him on the rest of what he's ranking crazily over here.
That's fine. All right.
Be ready for where Far From Home's at.
We're going to give one. It's not a speed round, but I got four questions for you.
Okay.
What advice do you give people that want to get into the comics? Where should they start? What are your thoughts on that?
So I would say your favorite character, think of who your favorite comic book character is, and then ask somebody who you know knows comics where to start. I know that's totally vague, but it helps because then somebody who is versed in that character or just versed in comics in general will know and guide you where to start. Like if Spider-Man, I would definitely just say, you know what, go for Amazing. You could even start at the mid kind of reboot of Amazing around 300-ish or around 500-ish. Like I would know where to guide you on that character. So pick out a character that you're or a couple of different characters, 3 or 4 or 5 different characters that you're really interested in and go for that. Now, if you're just kind of looking for like general starting points, if you're on DC's side, you can go Rebirth. I don't know about New 52, but you could even kind of back up on some of the stories there, depending on what characters. And then same with Marvel, just kind of depends on the character, but you could start at Civil War I. You could start at some of the more major events to kind of get a feel of all of the characters before you go from there.
Yeah, no, that's great. And do you read physical or do you read digital?
Both. When it comes to physical, I wish I could collect a lot more. I tend to just wait for Comic Cons and I'm like, okay, I have a little list in my head of the volumes that I need to complete. That's where I get the volumes because typically at Comic Cons on Sunday or the last day, it might be Monday or Thursday, what have you. On the last day, they typically discount those volumes a lot. So you can pick up volumes for like hauls at Comic Cons. Like some people will give you volumes for $2. So I definitely do a mix of both. And then if I can get like a heavy haul of just single issues, I'll get the haul and then come back a little bit later and wait. But I do both.
Okay, awesome. You watch a lot of movies. I want to know your setup. I want to know like, because the TV shows had me watching Loki before I started work. So that switched me from like nighttime viewing to like ass crack of dawn viewing. How do you go about your day and then watch your movies? And also, share with us your setup. Are you watching it on the TV? Are you watching it on a laptop? Do you have snacks? What does that look like? Go deep into that. I'm asking because I'm curious and I want to get personal on this one.
I love this. I love this question so much. So, okay, I'm typically at a movie theater if I can be now that the pandemic's kind of simmering down. AMC Stubbs, baby.
Yeah, AMC rock on,
Stubbs,
big guy.
A-list is the best.
I got to ask, were you a movie pass guy?
No. So I didn't get into I really wanted to, but I saw the warning signs and red flags at the beginning.
You could have saved the whole company, Leo, had you just signed up.
Oh my gosh, that company wouldn't have been saved by a big wig coming in and buying it.
And they certainly tried, my friend. I don't understand how that even got off the ground, but I saw way too many movies for $10, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, I mean, it was crazy. I had this like rapid fire moment when it was just like everything, you could see everything. And then I remember my friend saying, oh, well, I can only see select movies now. Movie Pass is now like Netflix and they're making movies apparently. One with Bruce Willis that I don't think ever came out.
Wait, really? And,
yeah, they were producing a movie with Bruce Willis.
Oh my God.
And I don't think it ever even seen the light of day. Thank goodness.
I can't wait to find it.
It was just like, they are doing all these different things, trying all these different avenues, and they can never land where they needed to. When I feel the smartest decision would have been to just sell that type of product directly to AMC.
Yeah, it made too much sense for the theaters just to come out with it. I will say, like, having MoviePass, and I was one of the like the first user, I guess, because I never got hit with the limited times or like the limited releases, or like I could see anything anytime because I was like grandfathered in. man, I saw so many movies that I went to see Geostorm twice.
Holy crap. Well, it was like, what, a movie a day?
Yeah. Every 24 hours. There were times that I would leave work, and I was working in New York City with Lou there, and I would be getting towards the train to head home, and I'd miss my train, and I'd just go, well, fuck it. Might as well just go see a movie in the heart of Manhattan, because I've paid $10 to this subscription fee, and I can just go see anything I want now. Mm-hmm. And that's why you see, and that's how you end up seeing Geostorm twice. And you don't do that on purpose, folks. You do that because you missed your ride.
Okay. recenter. Let's regroup. All right. Time out over. What does the setup look like when you're at home?
Okay. So at home, I've got a 55 inch that I watch on, and I just set up there. Okay. I either do a Blu-ray or I do a screening. Like sometimes I'll have home screeners. Netflix will send screeners. Sometimes Disney Plus. Just depends on what's coming up and what's out. So I'll watch either on my TV or my laptop, depending on the app. But I've got an Apple TV. Had to get that just to get that all set up. But yeah, I'm typically watching on that, and it depends on the day. But most of the time, it's a new movie. And then when I hit that weekend stride, oh man, I like to start my day out with at least one movie.
Really?
At least one, if not sometimes two. I went through this like list of, I think it was like 300 films that every film critic needs to see. And I went through that in like a couple years. I would just sit down and watch two or three a weekend. So I typically have that same pattern most weekends. I'll get up early, watch a movie. It's a mixed bag, guys. I'm probably just going to scroll on Netflix or look up top blank films of all time and watch something off that. So yeah, it's typically.
And how do you get past the, I don't know if I want to watch that right now. You know, like, how do you get past that in your brain and just go like, I'm just putting that on. Like, it's just going to happen. And if it sucks, it sucks.
Yeah, I mean, every movie I try to go into with no expectations, I'm like, if I heard it's bad from some friends, I might skip it, to be honest.
Nah.
Depends. It's just like, I'll just put it on, you know? Just go for it. It's all film. It's
so,
all cinema.
So I'm looking here. And Lou, if you have another question, please pop in.
Because... I got a couple. Can I just bang through these real quick?
Yeah, go ahead. Okay. Go ahead, buddy.
When it comes to movies, video games, any of that stuff, physical or digital, where do you err on? With a future perspective, like, are you collecting or are you saying everything has to be
collecting, man? I'm collecting. I want to have physical as much as possible. I just started collecting Criterion when they recently had a 50% off sale. I'm in love. Seriously, the physical stuff, I'm always going to be buying at this point. Like,
that's cool.
I would say I've gotten in and out of physical, but now I'm set. I'm back. We're back.
Can I ask, what's your favorite piece of physical that you have?
Oh man, there's a lot.
Like something that you always have on display, or something that you, anytime somebody comes over and you're showing them the setup, like, this is what I show anybody who comes by.
The good stuff.
Oh man, these Funkos, bro. Yeah. I mean, like, pretty much, I don't know. I don't think there's really one that I'm just like, this one, baby. Like, you gotta. No, I have like a range of things. There's a couple Funkos that I always show. There's a couple of different Blu-rays and Steelbooks that I'm just like, yeah. It just really depends, man.
That's cool.
Ken, you can take it back over.
I can take it.
You go back on.
I'm sucking it back in.
Yeah.
Leo, I don't know. I don't want to judge. I looking at our letterboxd, we seem to be in okay range together, which is good. But I'm seeing that some films that I have like highest rate, like some of my highest rated films, you don't have any ratings for. And I'm wondering if it's because you just haven't seen them, or if it's because you just never got around to letterboxd.
I never logged them. So I have so many movies to log.
So
I pretty much am refusing to just go down the list of all.
Because when movies. I look at this and I see that you don't have a ranking for like a Jurassic Park, you're making me nervous.
Nope. And here's the thing. My letterbox, I'm active on current stuff, but like going and reaching into the past, like, I'm just like, there's so much that I've seen that if some kind of post comes up where I contextually need to make a list, I will.
Fair
like
enough.
The Terminator, DCU, Marvel, Spidey. But I'm just kind of like, well, I'm just bumbling around on Letterboxd.
Fair enough. I made mine the other day, and I was on a terrible work call. And if my boss is listening, then I apologize. But I was just writing. Like, I was just listening and, like, well, not really listening, but I was just putting in ratings. And, like, I made it through a good 15 pages of the suggested movies at the top. So I'm feeling pretty good. But, okay, so, I mean, like, looking at your highest rated movies, there's nothing too crazy in there. I think I'm interested in, like, your feelings between old movies and new movies. You also have The Green Knight pretty high, and you have In the Heights as a five, which movie. I think is pretty controversial. I mean, I enjoyed In the Heights, but I think a lot of folks maybe didn't love it to a five-star extent. What got you there?
Everything about that movie was perfect, bro.
Yeah.
Everything for me. Like, the music, the singing, the dance numbers, everything was absolutely glorious. Now, I will say this. I was on a heck of a high for In the Heights. I would probably have it at a 4.5 now. Like, I have The Green Knight and some of the other films that I've got. But my top five currently of, I'll just say my top three are Judas and the Black Messiah, The Green Knight, and The Suicide Squad. And then In the Heights. So we've got some 4.5s bumbling up there for
Interesting.
Me. But
I just came from last weekend I saw Green Knight. And I know you got a chance to view Green Knight before the rest of us peasants. Like, I went in with no expectations. I had no idea what it was about. I had heard the story, the allegory, whatever it might be, a very long time ago in another life. But, like, no expectations for that movie. And it was bananas. Like, just, like, totally bananas from, like, a I have no idea what the hell is happening perspective. And I go to the movies by myself, man. I don't know how you go view. But here I am at, like, midnight watching this movie. And I go to, I had a few drinks beforehand, and I'm just sitting there watching this movie. And spoiler alert for anybody who hasn't been to see it yet, but there's this scene with these giants. And they were just,
Like
walking through the fog in the nude. And I was just like, where am I right now? What the fuck is happening? But it was so cool. Like, it was just like such a fun, beautiful movie. Like, what did you think when you first saw it? Were you like, this is going to be a very popular film, or this is going to be one that, like, that some people like?
I think it's definitely divisive, just because, like, it's not a surface level film by any means, and not, you know, to sound pretentious or anything, but it's just something full of rich themes and full of, like, lots of exploration, and it's a big journey. There's a lot of there's not a lot of dialogue. That's for sure. It's a lot of scenes that are just completely silent, let the score take over. It's a lot. It's a lot to take in. And I think that may sway away a certain film goer. So I definitely think it's pretty divisive. But man, that movie had me thinking it still got me thinking.
Seriously,
it is beautifully shot.
Yes.
Probably amongst 24's best shot movies, period. I mean,
so I just saw you tweeted out your favorite A24 movies on the new Twitter thread. And I'm interested to hear why you picked the movies you picked. I saw, was Midsommar in yours? You got it up.
Hereditary, Eighth Grade, Moonlight, and Minari.
Okay. So Moonlight bangs. We know that. Moonlight is like top five of like the last decade in films. Like, that is just a good movie. And if anybody has a La La Land issue, you can see yourself straight out the freaking door.
I'll say this about La La Land. It puts me to sleep.
It's such a pain in the ass, man. There is nothing worse than like a bunch of Hollywood people talking about how sad Hollywood is. It's just like, shut up.
Right. Like, I don't know if I wanted to hear that.
No. So anyway, Moonlight bangs. We know that. Hereditary is a must see, Lou. I know you're not as big a movie guy as Leo and I. You must. It's not for your partner. She will not enjoy.
Add it to the list.
Add it to the list. It is a must watch when you have a night alone.
It's so visceral and watch it. Crazy.
Yes, but it is, and it's just phenomenal, man. It's just good. There are some horror movies that are just slasher. People are running around, like the Fear Street series on Netflix is a lot of fun. But
really,
it's a lot of fun, and there's a lot of blood, and it's like a little silly, but it's a good story. It's totally fine. Yeah. But like Hereditary is one that like sits with you. It's got themes. It's got like acting. It's got like storytelling. It's good. It's a good movie. And then there's blood and shit too. So
the
like,
last time the partner and I watched a scary movie was Parasite. And she asked, is this a horror movie? And I said, no. And then halfway through, she was like, this is a horror movie. And I was like, is it? So see, that's where I'm working
yeah.
with.
Hereditary. Yeah,
not for her.
100%.
That's a laptop movie.
Not for her. Yes, that is a, oh, she fell asleep early. I can watch this on my laptop. Yeah. You know? With the headphones that's on. A good one. That's a good one. Yeah, and then what? And Eighth Grade is a Bo Burnham classic. Again, the guy just like secretly puts out like, and not so secretly these days, but like puts out some of the most incredible stuff. Didn't that, I believe that one got snubbed around award season. Am I correct?
Sure. That and Hereditary.
Yeah.
Majorly well, snubbed.
What's her name? I for Terry. Toni Collette. Yeah.
Oscar recognition for that role. Oscar.
Yeah, Lou, I'm telling you, Hereditary is one you got to You gotta
it's
find
on the list now. It's on the list. Good.
And look, nothing against Midsommar because I know Ari Aster's got those two, and then he's got that. Some there's something about the Johnsons before he did those two.
Yeah, I didn't feel that with I say Midsommar now because I heard him say it on an interview not so long ago, and now I just say it because I want him to like me, and I feel
that.
Like yeah. So but I didn't feel it, you know, like it was cool. It was fun. Florence Pugh is a lot of fun, as always. But like, you know, I thought it was good.
I liked it a lot, to be honest with you. I did. I just didn't like it on the level of Hereditary. I think that he executes these crazy moments like yes. right in the middle that set off a chain of events. And I just think that it was set off so much better in Hereditary. It was executed a lot better. It was a lot closer to the characters. It was smaller. It was more personal. The setting and location was a lot easier to understand in Hereditary as well. Yep. So I think it was just easier for me to follow. And the payoff or
I mean,
the ending of Hereditary was way crazier.
The last 25 minutes, I guess, or maybe, you know, if you want to extend it an extra 20 and call it the last 45 minutes of Hereditary is a fucking trip, my
it
friend.
Is. You have no idea what's coming. The whole time. It's like, oh my God, I didn't know that was going to come, but if we're in Hereditary now.
It just goes, once they're standing in front of the fireplace, from then until the end of the movie is just, and I cannot wait to have you back on in a couple of months when Lou has seen Hereditary.
Oh, man.
And we can,
Ooh,
and we can get his.
We'll book it a date.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
And what's nice about Hereditary is after the first watch, you'll still pick up little nuggets.
Oh, yeah.
When you go back, you're like, oh, there's that symbol. And there's like, you'll notice so much more on
the behind the scenes,
third, and fourth rewatches.
The behind the scenes stuff with the miniatures and like how they did the effects and all that stuff.
The
so
house
cool.
in the beginning.
Yeah. So cool. Good. So cool. Leo, this is the MCU for dummies. And we like to talk about how like guys in pajama pants beat the shit out of like bad guys with like millions of arms. So. Let's bring it back. You have tweeted out recently, and I know we're running on time here, so I'm gonna keep our final segment here pretty tight. I promise. You recently said that you are going to start a chronological rewatch of the MCU.
Mm-hmm.
I want to know. So Lou and I are doing something similar at a much dumber level, as this is the MCU for dummies. But I'm interested to hear what your order is going to look like towards the end of your rewatch, because you're probably going to slot Black Widow right after Civil War. Now that you have
Absolutely.
It, I want to know what it looks like your final four, because you've got Ragnarok, Ant-Man and the Wasp, Infinity War, Ragnarok, Ant-Man and the Wasp, and Endgame, all of which I am a firm believer. I know Ant-Man and the Wasp is super important to Endgame, but I am a firm believer in going Ragnarok, Infinity War, Endgame. I just love that trio because of the post-credit scene in Ragnarok where it just leads you straight in, right?
Yeah.
But I know how important Ant-Man and the Wasp is. Give me your final four. What does your final four look like?
So it's actually going to be Thor Ragnarok, Ant-Man and the Wasp, Infinity War, Endgame.
And that's a little controversial too, I think, right?
Well, because Ant-Man and the Wasp kind of happens at the same time as Thor Ragnarok and right before Infinity War, and then crosses over in that post-credit they do. So I'm going to do Ant-Man and the Wasp first and then go Infinity War. It's almost like right on the cusp of Infinity War is Ant-Man and the Wasp, because the whole blip happens when he comes out of the quantum realm. And yeah, so I feel like it belongs right before Infinity War, and then you just do Infinity War in game.
Yeah,
what a those cool, like one shot watch.
Those two have to be back to back, right? Yeah. You cannot do. I know a lot of people like to put Ant-Man and the Wasp in between them. You cannot split up Infinity War in game. It's a two parter.
It's Kill Bill Volume 1, Volume 2, man.
Bingo, like, just baby.
Watch them back to back.
I'm with you. Who in the MCU, the OGs? The OG six, let's call it, in the OG six, had your favorite character arc start to finish. Put it on a t-shirt, stamp it, make it federal post.
So are we talking six, like Tony, Steve?
Yep, your OG six. Hulk, everybody who was in the orgy the shot in New York. Yeah.
Yep. The battle in New York wraparound.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. The money shot.
I mean, I would probably say, to be honest, it's a nice tie between Iron Man and Captain America.
I know, you're being diplomatic. You need to pick one.
I need to pick one? Okay, I gotta go.
Sorry.
I gotta go.
Wow.
I gotta
interesting.
Go. The reason why is because he started as this just mogul to myself, greedy, selfish businessman, and goes from that, this engineer, this playboy type, to becoming an actual leader and somebody who actually gave all of that up to save his team. Like Steve spelled it out in the first movie. He said, you're not going to be the guy to lay down on the spikes and let the people walk over you. And he ended up being that anyway. So I think it just has to go to Tony for me. I absolutely love Steve. I think he's a close second. And I love that he got to finish it off with Peggy, because he was on the front lines the entire time. This guy was showing up. He was Captain America from beginning to end. But Iron Man had some moments in between, some character build. He swapped between Tony and Iron Man and had a lot of convoluted things happen in between. But at the end of the day, he still ended up being the one to save the entire galaxy.
Yeah.
With the snap. And I just think that's hard to top, man. That's hard to top.
It is hard to top. It is. I don't disagree with you. I think From the start, Iron Man was always one of my favorite. You know, Tony is cool. Robert Downey Jr. is cool. And then Steve Rogers always kind of gives you that, like, okay, we get it. Like, you're good at
he's
what you
do, hero.
Man.
You know, yeah, he's like the hero, and Tony's like the...
Yeah.
He's like the playboy, you know?
Yeah, and so Tony's hero. Fun. Tony's yeah, fun.
In your arc, and you begin your arc in your arc with I Am Iron Man. What a fantastic...
You can't go wrong. Like, you can't go wrong. I'm with you. All right, give me... You got as long as you need. I'm not gonna put you on timeline. You got as long as you need.
Are you
to
asking
tell me...
for the plug?
No, not yet.
Okay.
This is the question before the plug.
Okay.
Yes.
You
and,
go,
Lou. If you want to go.
All right. How about I go? You go. Plug. We're heading out.
Gotcha.
Okay.
You go.
We would be remiss if we did not even ask Leo about Kang.
Oh, that is true.
Oh man.
Leo, give us your best just 60 seconds of whatever comes to your mind about what we are in store for with Jonathan Majors as Kang.
Well, I just want to say, with Jonathan Majors, what a acting powerhouse he is. So, I mean, he showed up and showed out in the end of Loki, and we are going to see a fantastic, amazing performance from him. I am so excited to see the many different versions that come with Kang the Conqueror, because that technically wasn't Kang the Conqueror. It was one of his variants, He Who Remains.
Yeah.
So I am so in store. I'm like so hyped up for what's in store for the MCU, because we've got different variants. We've got different versions, which is most likely going to explain the No Way Home stuff. It's just going to be so much amazing controlled chaos. Like, I'm so hyped up, and I really hope they go the Iron Lad route, bring him into Young Avengers. You bring in Iron Lad into the story, and then you've got another variant, but played by maybe a younger actor, because Jonathan Majors wouldn't really belong in the Young Avengers. You bring in somebody younger, have that Iron Lad character kind of conflicted mentally, because he knows his destiny is to become Kang, but he wants to change his destiny. So if you have a conflicted heroic character and at the same time a main villain of Phase 4, we're in for it, guys. We're in for it.
Yeah. I mean... there's almost no words to explain how awesome it can be and how awesome it already is, really. Like, just what an incredible, and also what an incredible show of faith to give us, like, the big bad on Disney Plus, right? Mm-hmm. Like, they could have saved that for a movie and we all would have gone paid $15 a ticket, $20 a ticket, whatever. And they gave it to us on a Wednesday night, you know, 7 a.m. release, right?
Everybody's waking up early.
And then Kang so at cool. 6:45 on a Wednesday in the morning.
Yeah, that's nuts. That's nuts to me.
Beautifully done. Really, really without cool. them really showing us Kang. Like you said, Leo. Yeah. They said, like, we know who this is, but not yet.
Yeah, and a cool little lore, a little nod of Marvel lore too, to use the term "He Who Remains," right? Like, just such like a cool thing to tie everybody back in. All right, Leo, final question before you get to plug how many cool things you're doing and leave the people wanting more.
And your t-shirt.
Tell me,
swag on y'all.
you love your Tommy Pickles, man. That we know. If there's one thing we know about Leo is that he loves his Tommy Pickles. What is
Ken? I thought you had a question.
I do. I'm trying to phrase it because I want to squeeze two into one, Lou. I want to squeeze two questions into one so he doesn't get mad at me. What are you looking forward to the most about the multiverse? And what are you nervous about the multiverse?
Oh, wow. Well, most thing I'm looking forward to is hopefully they do this. Bringing in the other Spider-Man.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously. That. Ugh.
Do you think you're going to get Miles Morales animated Spider-Man or something along those lines into live action? Or do you think he's going to turn up live action wise?
Eventually, I think he will become live action. I think the smart move, since they have the SPMCU going on with Sony, with the Morbius and stuff. Look, have one of the Spider-Man die in No Way Home, and then Miles take his place.
Yeah.
Then you just kind of sweep a lot of stuff.
Just basically, it would have to be Tom Holland, right? I mean, he's done anyway.
Oh, not Tom. Don't kill Tom now. But he's not in that Sony SPMCU, so keep him in the MCU, and then
Toby.
Put Miles in the Sony movies. And then
you can't kill Toby Maguire either, and then there's a weird cult that loves Andrew Garfield, so I don't know what you're going to do.
Wait, Leo, let me squeeze in here. A huge fan of the Miles Morales comics and video game. Who would you cast as the actor?
Jonathan Majors.
No, that's a grown man. We need a less of a grown man.
I could go back 10 years and say Donald Glover, baby.
Boom. Wow. Ooh. Yeah. But he came in as his uncle already, right, in the MCU, I believe.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. He's technically Prowler since Homecoming referenced him. Like, oh, yeah, my nephew Miles. Like, oh, there's our Prowler.
Yeah.
You know, I really like Caleb McLaughlin, I think is his last name, from Stranger Things. I think he's got a lot of talent.
Oh, wow.
He did Broadway in The Lion King and did an excellent job. Okay. I think he's got a lot of underlying talent that people are missing out on. I think he could play an incredible Miles.
Yeah. I think what's super important and why Tom Holland, I think, is a lot of people's favorite, not just because the MCU is so cool now as opposed to what it was, but I think Tom Holland gets a lot of fans because he is so acrobatic.
Yeah. Right?
Like, and he's got so much of that skill. And I wonder, like, a guy who does Broadway, who's got dance, you know, a performer, right? Like, might have that type of thing also.
Yeah, that lean build, that gymnastics.
Yeah.
Kind of acrobatic look. Yeah.
Not that Tobey Maguire beer belly. We can put that.
Well, I mean, that first movie, he was cut.
He was cut until he started doing that weird dance in Spider-Man.
Oh, my God.
We've all been there.
Yeah, but listen, we've all done that weird dance too. I don't know if I can really make fun of him too much. All right, Leo, to quote our friends over at the Hot Wings place, what are they called? The Hot Ones? This camera, that camera, this camera, that camera. Tell the people what you got going on, my friend.
So come on over to youtube.com/geeklygoods. There you'll find me doing the latest reviews and reactions. And currently, I'm going through the MCU again chronologically. I just started with Captain America, the first Avenger, and I will be doing Captain Marvel next. That's to come. And also, I've got a TikTok. You can follow me at leo.rydell on TikTok and on Instagram, and then at leo.rydell on Twitter. Come on through, guys. Content working through this factory. So come through. We're talking all things geek, building a community together. Let's chat.
Awesome stuff. Awesome stuff. And also follow him on Letterboxd as well, so you can make fun of how well he thinks Ant-Man and the Wasp, Ant-Man and the Wasp is compared
Ant-Man
to
and the, Haas.
The rest.
It's next to Disney Plus show.
Just so you know.
Yeah, do not Google Ant-Man and the Haas. That's going to give you a different type of search than you want. But all right, Leo Riedel, Geekly Goods on YouTube. Super, super awesome to have you on the show. We really, truly appreciate it. And for everybody listening, MCU for Dummies, I'm Dummy Number One, Ken. That's Dummy Number Two, Lou. We will see you next week with more MCU fun.